Hi, I'm Herman from Athens. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
Common Ground is a private, not-for-profit organization offering dispute resolution services to the people in Columbia and Greene counties. Common Ground provides trained mediators who work to resolve the differences between two or more participants on issues including family, housing, business, workplace, school, and neighborhood disputes. The mediation process is informal, private, confidential, and voluntary. For more information, please contact Common Ground at 518-943-0523 or on our website www.commongroundinc.org.
Wave Farm programs are made possible, in part, by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered in Greene County by the Greene County Council on the Arts, the Alexander and Marjorie Hover Foundation, the Foundation for Contemporary Arts, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Waldholtz of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
Take your Wellingtons off, children, and Mammy will tell you a pleasant story.
Good evening. This is Foraging Ahead. I'm Kevin Factor, and in the studio with me this evening for a conversation is Barkin
Jihanli.
Jihanli.
Yeah.
Could you say that one more time?
Jihanli.
Why don't you try the other mic?
Yeah. Jihanli.
Excellent.
This one's better.
That one's better.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. The other one. The other one wasn't getting your name.
Okay,
so
we'll keep this one.
Barkin is a Turkish-speaking Greek Cypriot. No.
Turkish-speaking
Cypriot.
Yeah.
Who's also a peace activist, mm-hmm. and is currently studying economics at the Levy Institute at Bard College. And we're going to be talking about his life and a little Cypriot history.
Yeah.
And
a lot of it.
There is a lot of Cypriot history. Cyprus, as I was digging around, I met Barkin just incidentally on campus at Bard, and I started talking. I like your fantastic story, interesting stuff. And I don't know anything about Cyprus. Cyprus is one of the oldest, some of the oldest settlements in the world.
Yeah.
Like 10,000 BC, they're human.
The human settlement were found there, like 10,000 BC. Yep, exactly.
With the arrival of humans, the disappearance of dwarf hippos and dwarf elephants occurred.
Yeah.
Did you learn that in school?
Yeah. They go like very far. They go very far until like to the ancient times. But then, there's like a in the history classes. I don't know if we're diving right into it right
Let's
now.
Just get right into it.
Okay.
Because we've got about 12,000 years of history to cover.
Yeah. Of course.
And we'll just take it all the way up to you here now.
Yeah. So they start with the very, very ancient story, like history, 10,000, and you know the the Paleolithic ages and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then immediately we go like 6,000 BC.
6,000 BC.
Yeah, because that's when the Greek influence starts on the island, and you know they give us like a very quick like a chapter long history of what has happened. Like during the ancient, Athenian, Spartan era, and then
that's classical Greek. I don't mean to correct you on your Cypriotic history,
of course.
But it's my understanding that the first Greek influence in Cyprus was from the Mycenaeans.
The Mycenaeans.
There were Mycenaean colonies there, and city-states, and along with sort of the Trojan War. There's a lot of legends around there.
Yeah, that's why I said 6,000 BC, because the Trojan War, you know, has happened around the area era, and the Mycenaeans after the war, they just go to Cyprus and set up settlements and then start living there, and then from then we get a blank history and fast forward
I love delving into this. There was the Dark Ages, right?
The first
Dark Age in human history occurred in the Eastern Mediterranean, where you have these great civilizations, the first great civilizations. You have the Mycenaean Greek, the Egypt. You have Assyria and Babylon,
the Phoenicians,
and even the Persians.
Yeah, and then Crusades.
That's later. Yeah. That's the second half of the show.
Yeah,
we're gonna get. And there were these trade networks and everything, and there's a lot of speculation about what happened and what caused it, but. At around, I think it was 1700 or 1100 BC, there's the light goes out. And there was writing prior to that.
Yeah.
But then after that, literacy sort of disappeared for a while.
Yeah.
And I was reading, and you may know this more, and I'm talking about Cyprus history, and here you are from there. But, that the word itself, Cyprus, comes from Sumerian.
Yeah, it is actually. And it has a very a speculative explanation because what we were taught at school was that the name was given by the Sumerians again because of the natural resources on the island. And one of the rich natural resources that we have is the copper.
Copper.
Exactly.
And you can't have a Bronze Age without copper.
Exactly.
Right? But you can't have a Bronze Age without tin.
Sure. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and you know where tin comes from in that region?
From copper, I guess?
No, tin comes from Afghanistan.
Afghanistan, okay.
So those trade networks, one of the speculations for the Dark Ages was that... See, they never told you this in school because they didn't want you to know.
We don't really get to so the part where nationalism comes in is not about the ancient ages.
But one of the theories of the collapse of the near, the Eastern Mediterranean civilizations was that there was a disruption in the tin supply from Afghanistan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's,
but yes,
that's
copper. The Sumerian word for copper sounds a lot like Cyprus.
So, the original word, so that's the speculation, I guess, of the historians when they say the word comes from the copper. Because in Greek, the name of the island in Greek is Kypros. Mm-hmm. And so the word for the copper in the Sumerian was Kupros. And they were saying basically that's where the name comes from because of the Kupros. It kind of evolved to be a Kypros. over time. Mm. And, you know, Cyprus in English, obviously. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems like there was no empire that didn't feel like having Cyprus in its in its fold. I mean, Cyprus has been a destination for travel, you know, for vacationers for, you know, tens of thousands of years.
Yeah.
But you talk a little bit about it, 'cause people, for those of you who don't know Cyprus, if it's an island in the very far eastern Mediterranean.
Yep.
Just off the coast of modern day Turkey.
Yeah. It's basically surrounded by all the Middle Eastern countries around there. Turkey is the closest place.
Can you see Turkey from Cyprus?
If in a clear day like this today that we had.
So like, it's like like Sarah Palin's backyard. You could see Russia. Yep. You could see Turkey.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You could see it in a very like in a very clear day from the northern part of the island,
Which is where you are from.
Which is where I'm from, mm-hmm. And from the southernmost like tip of the island, in a very clear daylight, you could see Egypt and
really?
Israel. Yeah, you could.
You can see Egypt and Israel.
Yep, yep, exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, and again, like, we're surrounded by Lebanon, Syria, you know, Egypt, Israel, all these countries. Except that we don't have any connection to the mainland or, like, the Middle East, you know? We're in the Mediterranean Sea, so that's where we are located.
So then we have sort of that antiquity. You have the late Bronze Age, and we're moving rapidly through the history of your beautiful island.
Yeah.
We have, you know, Phoenicians. We have then the Greeks, and then the Persians, and then the
Assyrians.
And
then the Alexander the Great comes.
And and then it becomes part of the Roman Empire.
Yep.
And but before that, it was part of the Ptolemaic Egyptian.
Yep, Ptolemaic Egyptian. Because when Alexander the Great dies, like one of his great, very close friends, Ptolemy, he acquires. So they divide up the empire that Alexander had, and like Cyprus fell under the jurisdiction of the Ptolemies, land. So it became part of that, and then after the Persians and they fell, and then the Greeks and the Assyrians.
So all these different peoples and influences, over thousands and thousands of years, and then when you talk a little bit more about the recent history for those of you who don't know, which I didn't really until I started researching, is Cyprus is currently divided, right?
Yes.
And it's divided how and why?
And why. So, again, like going back to our history lesson, we, like, in school, we start... So I got to, because of my peace activism background, like, I got to take a look at both, like, I studied the textbooks from the north, obviously, but, like, the textbooks from the south.
And your school was conducted in Turkish?
The language of instruction was in Turkish until the ninth grade, and then I went to a British, like, colonial school.
Mm-hmm. Because Britain also...
yeah, we'll get to it.
Wanted a piece of that,
yeah.
Right?
So we start, like, in the north, like, when you read the textbooks, it starts with the, you know, Mycenaeans, and then fast forward, then you have the Crusades and all that, and then, like, you have the Lusignan period, right? And for those of you, like, who might not be familiar with it...
Which is, like, nobody.
Yeah, so the...
Which is fascinating.
Yeah, of course. Guy de Lusignan was this French guy who participated in the Crusades, and, you know, apparently he was, like, the French emperor at the time. And he, you know, on his way to the Holy Land, he acquired Cyprus, right?
How do you do that? Like a handbag or something.
You just set foot and say it's mine.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I should have thought of that.
Yeah.
So he did that,
and then after that, the Venetian trading people, they came in and they took, like, they actually they fought the Lusignan troops, and they took the island, right?
Mm-hmm. But these are all Christians, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Christians fighting Christians.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because the Venetians at the time, like, they were trying to, like, expand the republic.
Mm-hmm.
And because they were also traders, you know, they needed for like trading activity and for economic activity, they needed to expand their empire,
strategically
basically.
Strategically located.
Of course.
The trade route.
So they came in and they took it from the Lusignan. But the whole thing was, like, the way we're taught at school was that when the Venetians took the island, a lot of the indigenous peoples that lived on the island were Orthodox Christians, right? And Venetians, coming from Venice, they're obviously Catholic Christians.
Wow.
And when they first came in, they closed all the churches and they started oppressing the people of the island. And there's this one incident, you know, that they told us that the Archbishop of the island, he gets exiled and he goes to the Ottoman Empire. And he looks at the Orthodox people living under the Ottoman rule, and he sees how, like, you know, like, this society is very pluralistic. Like, obviously, like, Ottomans, they say, okay, Muslims are, like, the first-class citizens, and, you know, the rest is the second-class citizens, but we don't interfere in their beliefs. We don't interfere in the way they live. So it's more of, like, a pluralistic way of society at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's this case where Archbishop asks the, Ottoman emperor, hey, like, please come to the island and liberate our people. Like, we don't care, like under what conditions we live. We just want to practice our beliefs.
So the Eastern Orthodox Archbishop asks the
Ottoman Emperor,
Ottoman Emperor,
exactly,
to come in and get rid of the Italians who were wanted to make everybody Catholic.
Exactly, they were basically closing all the churches and trying to convert everyone into Catholicism.
Is that right?
Yeah, and it, like, for those of you who doesn't know, the seat of the Orthodox Church is in Istanbul.
Yeah,
the seat of the Orthodox Church is in Constantinople.
Yeah,
it's in Istanbul. So,
well, because Cyprus, if you go back even a little bit further, was part of the Byzantine Empire.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's where the connection comes, and, you know, the Archbishop of Cyprus goes there and, you know, talks with the emperor, and I mean there's obviously other reasons why Ottomans wanted to invade, obviously, but they also emphasize that event as, like, Greeks asked the Ottomans to come in, right? It feeds into the propaganda.
And so you're looking at this from the point of view of a Turkish speaking Cypriot,
exactly,
and that,
exactly,
that, in a sense, do you feel like this was, like, justification
for the occupation
existence of a Turkish speaking population?
Exactly.
In Cyprus.
Exactly. That's the justification for the people, basically, to, like, say again, like, we came from this era, mm-hmm, and we have existed since then, so
right,
that's it.
Right.
And you know, like, there was no, like, forceful way of, like, coming in. It was even asked by the people who were living on the island,
yeah,
right?
You were invited in.
Exactly.
By the Greeks. Who are now, you know, living in a different, like, country.
Exactly.
Like, than the northern part. But at the time, they thought it was a good idea.
Exactly.
And of course, this was all hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
Like 600, 700 years
ago.
Yeah,
and boy, you guys, some people really can hold a grudge for a long time.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
As you say, this will continue, but this reminds me of another island nation that had a very similar history and was also ruled by the British.
Uh-huh.
Where there was a division, and there is a division today still.
And Ireland?
That country's Ireland,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, of course. Everywhere, I mean, you could see the divide and rule pattern everywhere the Brits were, you know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting, but...
interesting in an infuriating...
In a very way.
So the Turkish...
The
Ottoman Empire
comes in, and this is roughly around, just to, like, locate you on a timeline, this is roughly around 1571, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, like, 600 years ago. And And they come in and they take over the island. And, you know, the Ottoman rule lasts from, like, 1570s to, like, 1870s. So for 300 years, the island is under the Ottoman rule. And in 1870s, Ottoman Empire is, like, already, like, going down. It's the sick man of Europe. Mm-hmm. And, like, mm-hmm. all these rising imperial powers like Britain and Germany and France and Russia are, you know, like, trying to, like, find ways to take over, like, the already, like, leftovers of the Ottoman Empire and divide it up, you know, among themselves. And the Russians are attacking from the east. And they almost reached to Istanbul, to the seat of the empire. But in 1870s, the, you know, like, Britain is kind of, like, skeptical of this, you know, for, like, another power except itself to rise, you know. So they approach the Ottoman Emperor and say, hey, we'll prevent you from the Russian aggression in the condition that you give us the island.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they... It's so funny. It's so funny because the thing is that, like, they're so desperate at that point. Like, the Ottoman Empire the Ottoman Empire is so desperate at the point. They're just, like, so weak and, mm-hmm. you know, like, so worn out from the historical, like, conflicts around them that, you know, they said, okay, but in a way to, like, feed, again, going back to the propaganda part of it, like, they tell us basically at the school that the island was rented to English for, I mean, yeah, the official papers say, but I mean, like, there's no excuse for, you know.
Was it just a pure rental? Did they have to renew their lease yearly, or
no,
was it a rent-to-own situation?
So it was like
Hong Kong?
Yeah, so I think the condition was that as long as, like, the Britain would participate on the side of Ottoman Empire against any war with Russia,
mm-hmm.
the island was to remain under British rule, right? Mm. And, like, there's this story about, like, how, like, the local people, like, welcomed the British because, British were kind of, like, terrified at, like, the local resistance when they were first going to come to the island.
What would they? They thought there would be resistance.
There were, yeah. Mm. They thought, you know, the local people would resist to it.
Now, plus, this is the 1870s, but a little bit earlier, like, local resistance, you also have, as you're talking about Turkey or the Ottoman Empire is the sick man of Europe, you also have the movement toward Greek independence.
Of course, yeah.
Which ties in.
In 1820s, this, yeah. you have, like, the Greek independence movement and, you know, Greece breaks away from Ottoman Empire. Again, as I said, like, Ottoman Empire has been, like, losing a lot of territory, like, both in Europe and in the Middle East. So it's, like, they are shrinking in all directions. But, like, so there's this story, British people thinking that, you know, they're going to meet a lot of local resistance when they first step on the island. So they do a little bit of preliminary research about, like, the people on the island, and they find out that the people on the island are very fond of money and material wealth. So when they first show up to the island, like, they come from
lots of money.
Exactly. They came with a lot of gold. They set foot on the southern city called Limassol. It's called Limassol today. Mm-hmm. They set foot on that little coastal city, and they're trying to march to the capital, right? And on the way, like, the local people coming out, and they're thinking, you know, it's like they're coming out for resistance. So they started giving out people gold.
Is that right?
Yeah, so they started giving out people gold left and right to just, like, in a way to buy the people off. And,
well, sure, why not?
And the people,
I,
like,
mean, if these are people, your tenants, right?
Exactly, you know, exactly.
Like, they're gonna rent, you know, give
yeah,
them to the man.
So they basically, like, they were welcomed on the island. People were happy that they were, like, the British came, and so. From then on, like, you know, fast forward to, like, 19 uh-huh. to the First World War, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Ottoman Empire goes into the war with the Axis powers,
yeah.
with Germany.
With not the Axis, but the Triple Entente.
Triple Entente, yeah. So they go in. They side with the Germany. Basically.
Yeah, they side with the Germans, right?
Britain says, okay, like, you're in a war with our enemy. Like, you're on the same side as our enemy. So we are we're annexing the island. It's ours now.
Yeah, yeah.
So they stopped paying the rent from them.
They stopped paying rent.
Yeah,
right.
And they say it's ours.
Uh-huh.
And so, but, like, you get, like, after the First World War, right, like, there are a lot of Cypriots who fought in the for the British Empire in
both.
The war.
I read a little bit. It's both Turkish
and Greek
Cypriots.
Yeah, and at that
fought
point
for Britain in the British Army, both in World War One and in World War II.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But at that point in the First World War, like, there wasn't really, like, not a lot of national consciousness. There was some, but there wasn't a lot.
And you mean, you say national consciousness, you mean national Cypriotic consciousness?
No, that, like, in national consciousness in the sense that, like, Greek or Turkish. So at the time, like, people, like, because Cyprus had never been independent in its history, so people always, like, tended to identify with it, like themselves with, like, a mainland, right? So in 1820, you had the Greek independence, so people on the island that were, like, of Greek ethnicity or, like, Orthodox background, they said, you know, they were, like, we are, like, Greeks first and foremost, or, like, people who came from Anatolia region when the Ottomans first came, they were of Turkish ethnicity, they were saying, we are of, like, you know, like, Ottoman background, right?
Mm.
So, after the First World War, right, the Ottoman Empire gets defeated, and, you know, it's forced into a treaty, like, Versailles Treaty-like agreement, and, like, it gets invaded, right? So, the side of the history I got taught was that you know, the Atatürk comes in, and, you know, he just expels all the, like, foreign invaders and founds the Republic of Turkey, the modern-day Republic of Turkey that we know, in 1923.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, like, when the Republic of Turkey was signing agreements with the foreign powers, with England, France, and Italy, it was asked to leave Cyprus. So Atatürk says, you know, like, we have nothing to do with Cyprus. Cyprus is British. It's a British territory. It's outside our national boundaries. So we have no, like, stake. We have no stake in Cyprus. So it's a British territory. So by 1923, it's acknowledged that it's a British territory. And even the founders of the Republic of Turkey says, like, it's
And you were taught this in
school.
In your school.
In right. school, yeah. So it said, you know, like, we have no stake in it. We, like, in a future dispute that would arise around Cyprus, Turkey should be left out of it, right? And then that's when the people on the island of Turkish ethnicity start questioning things, right? It comes along and, like, they come along and say, okay, we're faced with a couple choices. We're faced with this choice that we are part of the British Empire and we accept the British identity. But, I mean, obviously we're not, like, British. And then there's this other side when, people of Greek ethnicity, people of Orthodox origin, they look at Greece and they say, okay, like, Britain is an occupier on the island. Mm-hmm. And our ultimate goal is to get rid of this occupation and annex the island with Greece, like, be part of Greece because we are Greeks, right? And it's the idea of enosis.
Enosis, yes. Enosis.
And it means, in it's a Greek word, it means union.
Yeah, and there was the Megali idea?
Yeah, it's a Megali idea. Megali idea. It's this big Greek empire.
Yeah, and irredentist belief.
Yes. Yes, it's this. I mean, it still exists to this day, like, by some national, like, neo-Nazi people in Greece that have, like, parliamentary
seats. Right, they want sort of the Ionian coast.
Exactly.
And they want the,
exactly.
You know, the,
yeah, there's
they
this.
They want Sicily back.
There's this. Exactly. Even from yeah. Italians, like,
oh, yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's this, like, very neo-Nazi idea, like, fascist idea that still exists to this day, but it's minor.
Yeah.
It has no voice in this society. Anyways.
So, Enosis.
This
union with Greece.
Greece.
Right.
Exactly.
And what was, maybe you don't know this, maybe you don't. So, union with Greece, and then, but what then about the significant population of
Yeah, Maronites and Turkish-speaking Cypriots.
Maronites. Well, Maronites. Okay, I was going to bring up the Maronites, of course, because I never miss an opportunity to talk about the Maronites
and Armenians too,
and Armenians
on the island. Yeah.
Huh. But Maronites. Do you want to explain what Maronites are?
Maronites is this. It's a group of Christian denomination that are predominantly living in Lebanon right now.
Mm-hmm.
They are, I think they're the majority of the population in Lebanon, mm-hmm. if I'm not mistaken. And it's just a Christian denomination.
Catholic.
Catholic, exactly.
They recognize, they are the easternmost branch, sort of the Roman Catholic
yeah.
Church. So, well, they have different, rituals, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not even Christian, but,
yeah.
But, the head of their church is... The Pope in Rome.
Is the Pope, exactly. Yeah.
So you have a Maronite community living in...
On the island. It's yeah. So by this time, the island is pretty mixed. So the villages, the towns, it's all mixed.
Mm-hmm.
There are some exclusively Greek villages, mm-hmm. and there are some exclusively Turkish villages.
And you see this over and over and over throughout history.
Yeah.
You see this over... You see this in Kosovo, Herzegovina. You see this in Bosnia. You yeah. see this... In
Albania,
you see this in, you know, in Ireland. You have communities that are mixed,
yeah,
that get along for the most part.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
then you have nationalist leaders come, and
which were also, by the way, like instituted by the British. Of like, so we got to emphasize that.
Yeah,
there. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I'm not worried that we're going to offend our British listeners.
Yeah, we apologize.
No yeah. apologies. I have no apologies.
Yeah, but know. So again, by this time, again, you have this denomination of people that got rejected by their motherlands, right? The people of Turkish ethnicity,
right.
They look at Turkey and they look like they see that the leaders of new Turkey, mm-hmm. like the modern Turkey, yeah. Ataturk,
rejected them,
and then you have this people. I mean, and by the way, the Greek speaking population on the island were the majority.
Mm-hmm. Now,
in terms
was there
of
a plan did of by the Greek speaking population?
Yeah.
For how to incorporate the Turkish speaking population once. Enosis
yeah.
occurred.
Yeah, so the idea was there were two schools of thought when it came to this. One was the extermination of people, basically, during the process of independence and annexation with people, like with Greece.
Okay, so that's a simple solution.
That's the simple solution. There yeah. was this extermination of people, and then there was this
was
other...
Was that seriously a thought, like to exterminate the Turkish-speaking?
Yeah, I mean, like, because... So British did this kind of tricky thing where in order to suppress Greek independence movement, they recruited Turkish-speaking Cypriot police officers. And they basically, like, and that's where, like, the rivalry started to, like, kind of, like, fire up because, like, the in order to, so they, the British officials, they set up this special police unit called the Auxiliary Police, right? Mm. And this police unit was specifically for suppressing the Greek independence movement. And they exclusively recruited Turkish-speaking Cypriots into that police unit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is a common tactic the British used throughout the empire.
Exactly.
India, Pakistan.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So one school of thought was to exterminate all the people. And the other school of thought, which kind of evolved over time, was that the... Hey, we're the majority on the island, and, you know, like, they're, like... So, at this point, the demographics were, like, 20% to 80%, right?
Okay, so 80%, but 20% Turkish-speaking. Still a significant...
Exactly. So, the whole idea was to assimilate people, right? Because the country was completely mixed, right? And at this point, like... And my grandfather, like, still to this day speaks Greek, knows how to speak Greek.
Uh-huh.
So, at this point, like... The Greek was the dominant language, and a lot of the people knew how to speak Greek, and they lived next to each other. So, it was like assimilation, basically culturally,
mm-hmm.
and this is like why we kind of have the occupation, the division between these two ideologies, because by the time you get to the 50s, Am I allowed to go that far? Or
hang on, we're going to take a short break. But I want to introduce. I think it's a Turkish word, taksim.
Yes, taksim. Yes,
which is division.
Yes.
So the two strains of thought that are at work here are enosis
and taksim.
And taksim.
Yes.
And we're going to listen to I believe this is a Cypriot wedding tune.
Yeah.
Called Dilirga.
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 Yeah.
By the band Dunya, which means
world.
World. Listening to Foraging Ahead, I'm Kevin Factor, and I'm having a conversation this evening with Barkın
Cihanlı,
Turkish-speaking Cypriot. We're getting an amazing history lesson on Cyprus, the island of Cyprus in the Eastern Mediterranean, and the causes and solutions, hopefully, to the current political divisions on that island. So,
by the way, this song is amazing. It's about a place. This place, Dilirga, it's a region in Cyprus. It's a little village actually, and it's about the people of that village, and you know how crazy they are, basically.
what do you mean, how crazy they are?
Like they drink a lot, and they're very like how can I say, like womanizers. the man of the village, basically.
And this is a wedding song.
It's a wedding song, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's in a very how can I say? It's a wedding song, and they teach.
But it's fun. It's a fun.
Of course, yeah. Of course.
Oh, cool! I did not know. Thanks for the.
And they sang it in both languages, which is amazing. I think.
Oh, it was both Turkish and Greek.
Yes, exactly.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice. So it truly is Dunya, the world.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
So we have these political divisions mm-hmm. in Cyprus. We have majority of the island is the Republic of Cyprus.
Yeah. So I think before the Republic of Cyprus, we should a little bit emphasize what was happening towards the end of the British colonial.
Okay, the British colonial rule is coming to an end.
To an end, and you know there. By 50s, you have this ideology of enosis, like kind of like peaking, and you know the church is like behind it, and
the Eastern Orthodox Church,
the Church of Cyprus is behind it. It's headed by the Archbishop of Cyprus, and they basically want to unite Ireland with Greece, enosis, the union with Greece, and it as a competing ideology at this point, like British, they managed to pull Turkey back into it. You remember, I mentioned like how like in the beginning Turkey said we're out of this, like
right.
We have nothing to do with this.
Right.
British managed to pull Turkey back into this, and at this point, like the local Turkish speaking population, like have their leaders, and they're arguing for taksim, which means division, and the ideology rests on the concept that there are two communities on this island. Like, we should divide the island based on the demographics. And, you know, if Greeks want to unite their island with Greece, they're more than welcome to do so. And but we want to be part of Turkey. So give us our part of the island and we'll connect. We'll unite with Turkey. We'll be part with their, with Turkey. That's what the Taksim ideology
now,
comes.
Was there any point there was no voice saying, let's just be our own country whole?
No, there at this point, there's no Cypriot national consciousness. Huh. And that's what I think the British like successfully did. But Enosis in the beginning wasn't against Turkish Cypriots. Enosis was in the beginning, it was against the British colonial rule. Mm. It didn't have like the Turkish Cypriot and anti-Turkish Cypriots element in it.
Right.
So in 55, you know, like the Enosis leaders established this this paramilitary group called EOKA. Which, you know, like, they fight the British colonial rule through armed means.
Mm-hmm.
And in 58, in response to it, the Turkish Cypriot leaders formed the TMT. Mm-hmm. And again, like, they're the advocates of the Taksim. Mm-hmm. And they are an paramilitary mm-hmm. extremist group as well. And mm-hmm. they are, you know, they are fighting both British and the Greek Cypriots.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, fast forward to 60. The colonial rule ends in 60. And British says, I'm going to live in 1960. Like, it's up to you to decide what you want to do with this island. I am out of here, and I don't care what you guys do. And actually, they go to Greece, and they go to Turkey, England, and they say, okay, we need to find a solution to this island. They don't even ask the local people of the island. They go to Greece and Turkey.
Yeah.
And well, they say, okay, we
well,
need
what do you know?
Yeah, exactly. What do you know? What do you guys know, right? Like, we and they come to the conclusion that, okay, we need to, this island is too dangerous. We need to find a separate solution other than being part of the mainland. And the British wanted to do this, I think, because they wanted to still maintain, like, even though they would leave officially, they would still wanted to maintain their presence on the island.
Are there still two
yes,
British...
Air bases
on Cyprus.
One of the conditions for independence was that Britain was going to maintain two air bases on the island, and they still operate to this day.
And just for your own good,
yeah.
For your own good.
To protect us, right? and actually, just to give you a, like brief, quick recap of what are like how things are going, like. British air bases were actively used against Assad in the Syrian civil war.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like, so they still operate to this day.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, so in 60, they go to England. England goes to Turkey and Greece, and they come up with this solution that Cyprus is going to be independent, and it's going to be a bicommunal republic based on the demographics, right? And it's going to be, like, in the public office, it's going to be 70-30% ratios. And in the army, it's going to be 60-40% ratios. So 60% Greek Cypriot and 40% Turkish Cypriot. And they also said, like, based on the demographics of the island, symbolically, we'll just have, like, some Turkish and Greek troops on the island. But they're just going to be symbolic troops. And, you know, it's just, like, it's one of those things. They said, okay, because of the demographics of the island, it's going to be a presidential system. And the president of the island is going to be a Greek Cypriot. And the vice president is going to be a Turkish Cypriot. But to prevent, because the ratios in the public offices is 70-30%, to prevent the, you know, like, majority rule, we'll institute the vice presidency with a veto power.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that
just to protect against sort of mob rule.
Exactly.
Right,
to
right.
mob rule.
To protect the minority rights.
Exactly.
Okay.
To protect the minority rights.
So the vice president, who would be... Turkish speaking would have a veto power. Okay.
Veto power or anything you
over
can imagine.
Anything. That's
so,
a lot of power.
Yeah, that's a lot of power, exactly, given to minority people, right?
Yeah. Which, you know,
which is, I mean, fair in the case, because British feared that, you know, like the Greeks didn't Greek Cypriots didn't really embrace this, and they saw the Republic of Cyprus as a stepping stone to Enosis.
Uh-huh.
They still saw that they would pursue that no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So they felt the need to do this, and I think to pit people against each other. But anyway, that's another story.
Yeah.
So this happens. So the Republic of Cyprus, you know, starts out, and there are two founding agreements, but there's a third one that is very key, and that's the guarantee agreement, and that's the one that provided the Turkish the pretext for the Turkish occupation. The guarantee agreement basically says that if any conflict happens on the island, there are three guarantee powers of the unity of the constitution and of the island. And those powers are Greece, Turkey, and England. And if anything happens on the island, these countries have the right to intervene and prevent the breakdown of the constitution.
What could go wrong?
What could go wrong? Exactly. Yeah. So a couple of years, the Republic of Cyprus is doing fine.
And this is the first time in its long, long history that Cyprus is actually independent country.
Exactly.
Not under Greek, not under Mycenaean Greek, not under Ottoman, not under
British.
The French guy who stepped
Lusignan,
on it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Not under the Venetians.
Yeah, exactly.
Who wanted to make everybody Catholic. And
exactly.
The first time in the history that Cyprus is an independent country.
Exactly.
That's exciting.
That's pretty exciting. Yeah. Exactly. It's actually good. I hope it happens again in the future. Fast forward to 63, right? 3 years after the founding of the Republic. So a lot of the times, like during this 3 years, a lot of things were going well, but the vice president was using his veto power in a lot of communal cases. And so in response to this, the president, who was the archbishop of, so the president of the Republic was also the archbishop of the island.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
President Makarios.
Yeah.
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 And he was the leader of the Enosis movement.
Oh, okay.
So when there was colonial rule.
A lot of hats.
Exactly. So when there was the colonial rule, Archbishop of the island was the leader of the Enosis movement. And after the colonial rule, he becomes the president by a popular vote.
Mm-hmm.
And the vice president was the leader of the Taksim movement.
Okay.
And he becomes the vice president.
Whew.
Yeah. So you have these very key influential figures at the top of the republic.
Who are
deciding policy.
Diametrically opposed to one another.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, they both see the Republic of Cyprus as a stepping stone to something, to their goals, to their eventual goals. So in 63, the archbishop and also the president... he wants to change the constitution.
Mm.
And one of the changes that he envisioned for the constitution was to remove the veto power of the vice president.
Okay.
And guess what happens?
A coup d'etat?
No, the vice president vetoes that constitution changes.
Oh, okay. Well, could have seen that coming.
Yeah. So basically the president sees as the veto power as a very big barrier in front of Enosis. And he wants to change some things in the constitution. So he proposes, let's remove this veto power. And the vice president says, what are you saying?
veto.
Veto,
right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So this happens. Jeez. And then after this happens, at this point, the paramilitary groups on both sides of both communities are underground. Because after the founding of the republic, they went underground. After this event, they go above ground and they start fighting each other, basically.
In mid-60s.
63.
Yeah.
And the fighting goes until 67.
Wow.
And there's a lot of, massacres, missing people, kidnaps, people's property being stolen, a lot of,
And is this in living memory of your family?
Yes. My grandfather was a general in the war.
Really?
Yes. And I have a lot to say about that, too, because he's a peacemaker now.
Oh.
Yeah. But so the civil war goes on until 67, and at this point, the Turkish Cypriots. We are the minority on the island, so they have been pushed to reservation areas by the Greek speaking paramilitary groups, and they're living in these areas, and it's not a bad side of the history. But anyways. In 67, the Turkish army, the Turkish officials, they threaten, saying that if these keeps on going, if the massacres keep on going,
mm-hmm.
we're going to use our right under the guaranteed treaty mm-hmm. to come to the island.
Mm-hmm.
and that frightens the president of the island.
Yeah.
And at this point, up until this point, the president and the archbishop of the island, he wants annexation like immediately. He wants Cyprus to be part of Greece. He wants Enosis to be implemented. But this is the turning point in the history where 67, the intercommunal conflict stops for a while.
Okay.
And the archbishop's, he comes to the realization that, okay, we can't do Enosis by force because the Turkey has the right to intervene under this treaty.
It seems like he didn't really think a whole lot of this through. You know, this... Like,
what do you mean?
Well, it seems rather clear that, you know, setting, you know, the way that the Constitution is set up and with the veto powers and the right of Turkey and Greece and England to step in whenever they wanted.
But they were relying on the idea that some of them will turn a blind eye to it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Fair enough. So there's a respite, a moment of peace.
Yeah, a moment of peace, like a ceasefire, I would say. In 67. And then this is the turning point because the archbishop comes to the realization, okay, we can't do Enosis by force. So what we're going to do is we are the dominant people on the island. We are the majority. So we're just going to like let the Turkish-speaking Cypriots assimilate over time. And then, you know, 20 years down the road, like we'll execute Enosis. So this happens. But this is the dividing point in the Greek-speaking community because the debate becomes, do we want immediate Enosis? Do we want, like, extermination? Or do we want, like, do we have to wait for this?
Mm-hmm.
And fast forward to 74, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, from 67 to 74.
So, and during this time, I mean...
There's a ceasefire,
and... I mean, earlier you mentioned that there are...
Reservation areas.
But prior to that reservation area, that there are mixed communities
yes.
all over the island. So do you have sort of what happened in India and Pakistan? Do you have Greeks fleeing Turkish-speaking areas and Turkish-speaking people fleeing Greek areas? I mean, was this separation occurring in that way?
Yeah, I think during... So as far as I've been told and, like, I've studied... there was some sort of separation, not completely,
mm-hmm.
But like people preferred to live in dominant villages. So like, either
even
like
though before they were totally fine with it,
exactly.
Now all of a sudden they prefer
exactly.
to live with
exactly.
Yeah.
So there started some sort of movement at this point in time.
So then let's move up to 73.
Okay. So in 74 there was a coup d'état in Greece. Right, the military junta takes over the power in Greece, and they sent a letter to the president, to the archbishop of the island. They say, tomorrow we're doing the Enosis. And the archbishop replies and says, I'm not appointed by the Greek government. I'm an elected official of this republic. And I like as much as you guys want to do Enosis, I want to do the Enosis as well. But like under these conditions, we can't do it tomorrow. And the Greek junta sends a Greek general army officer to Cyprus immediately the next day and try to overthrow the archbishop of the island. So they basically say, okay, you don't want to do Enosis tomorrow. We'll get rid of you as well. So they send this army officer called Grivas to the island. To overthrow the president Makarios, right? And at this point, the Greek community in the Greek Cypriot community, they're divided within themselves as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the conflict starts first as an intra-communal fight between the Greek speaking Cypriots. But then the ones who wanted immediate Enosis starts like fighting the Turkish speaking Cypriots as well at this point.
Mm.
And that's when you have the Turkish government, okay, this is enough, we're going in there. So
then Turkey comes in.
And then Turkey comes in 74, not long after the coup d'etat. And basically in 74 there happens the occupation and the Turkey divides the island. So I want to emphasize this, that the Turkish government had the under the guarantee treaty had the right to intervene, but the what makes the Turkish intervention illegitimate was the fact that they used their right to intervene, but they had to intervene in a way to protect the unity of the island and the constitution. And what they did was to intervene and divide the island. And that's what makes the North Cyprus as a soto state, mm-hmm. as an illegitimate state, mm-hmm. and unrecognized by Turkey.
So, this just flew. We've only got a few more minutes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. We haven't even got to the best part.
What's the best part?
The peace-building part.
Okay. So, young people such as yourself,
yes.
right, you said your grandfather was a general
yes.
In the Civil War.
Yeah.
And he is now for unification?
Yes, he is for
unification. He's for unification?
Yeah.
So it seems like there's been a real sea change.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about how that came about, because the president of Northern Cyprus mm-hmm. seems like he's interested in unification.
Exactly.
The president of the Republic of Cyprus seems like he's interested in unification.
Yeah.
So how did this come about, and what, how do you see the future?
So, the Republic of Cyprus and the Greek-speaking community, they always wanted the island to be one because they were the ones who lost a lot of their properties and a lot of missing people in after the war. But the Turkish-speaking community, they came to want the unification much recently because of the changes of attitude from Turkey, and that happened after the 80s because North Cyprus is kind of like a colony of Turkey. It appears on paper as an independent state or whatever, but it's I'm writing my whole master's thesis on this. It's like it's basically a colony, and there's a top down attitude from the mainland on North Cyprus, and the mainland Turkish people, they always look down upon the local indigenous peoples of the island. It's like, we give you guys the money, we saved you from Greeks, and you're being ungrateful to us.
But you actually have a different currency, right?
Of
you have
course.
The Turkish lira.
Yeah.
And Cyprus, the Republic of Cyprus has the euro.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That happened too. Yeah. But so there's a top-down attitude from the Turkey to the North Cyprus, people in North Cyprus. But again, my involvement with the... So this has changed a lot of things in the perspectives of the people, because people started to realize that Turkey is not in it for us. Turkey has different goals for the island. Turkey wants the gas of the island. Turkey wants the whole island.
Right. There's drilling off the east.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So people came to realize that, and that there has been a change of attitude, because look at the 50s and you see there is a motherland relationship, infant motherland relationship mm-hmm. between the island of the people and Turkey. But now that's gone, because another aspect of it is that we have to sign economic protocols with Turkey, and part of it is that it's all the economic policies that they impose on us are neoliberal policies mm-hmm. and that it reinforces the occupation and colonialism.
All right. Well, I can't believe we're out of time.
Are we actually?
Yeah.
Wow.
We are. You should come back and we'll talk
more
about
it. We should do a part two.
We'll do a part two. I want to hear about your own personal history and your family history, and which is equally fascinating. And it goes back 10,000 years,
yeah.
right, to your hunter-gatherer forebears.
Yeah.
killing off the pygmy hippos and elephants. How
exactly.
dare you? Shame on you. thank you so much for coming, Barkin.
And, thank you. I appreciate it.
And
thank you, guys.
Do come back. Yeah. And this has been Foraging Ahead, and hope you guys have a great evening.
One more time up on Cypress Avenue, I call one more time up on
Cypress Avenue.